We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. It is a Thursday. It is another doomsday for OSU basketball. They're still winless in Big 12 play. Joining me as always is Kyle Porter. Kyle, this feels like a broken record, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm bummed out about basketball right now. I hope that my perceived negativity isn't taken as a slight at Brad Underwood. I think he's going to be a long-term amazing hire at Oklahoma State, but I don't know. I'm frustrated with how they're playing right now. Is that a fair way to feel about Oklahoma State basketball?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're 0-6. I don't like. I think sometimes we let the vocal minority, like in the comments section, about you need to be more positive. You need to give Brad a chance. Like we let that kind of. I don't feel like a majority of people feel that way, but I mean, there's no other way to slice it. You got to start winning games. Like,
yeah.
You have to beat Kansas State on your home floor. And at a certain point, like, you and I are both high on Brad Underwood. No one's not. Like, we think the program will be going in a great direction, but at some point you got to start winning games. Like, they're 0-6 in conference play and they're just giving up just insane amount of points. And I think that's where we got to start, Kyle, is, you know, Underwood prides himself on defense and turnovers, but they're getting absolutely lit on defense, giving up, I think, over 90 points in the last three home games, something like that.
Well, Bruce Weber of Kansas State said it best on Wednesday night when he said, I was surprised that I was surprised they scored 88 and didn't win, basically. I was surprised that we were able to score on them. And it comes down to second half defense, last 5 minutes. I mean, I think Kansas State was like 7 for 9 in the last five. I feel like teams are shooting like 80% against Oklahoma State in the last 5 minutes. And I'm not really exaggerating there. Like, I think that's like a real number or close to it.
Yeah.
And that is just, I don't know. I guess that's my deal with Underwood is you felt like coming in, he was going to be all about defense and showed that in large swaths in the non-conference schedule, but they've been just poor on defense in the first six games in the Big 12. They're pretty good against Baylor, but other than that, it's just been nonchalant and non-existent. And I don't know. I feel like that's coaching to an extent, motivation. I don't know what it is, but it needs to change. This team's better than last place in the Big 12.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a switch from that Maryland game they should have won, the drubbing they put on Wichita State. This doesn't even look like the same team is the most stark contrast I can come up with. But Kyle Boone posted the five thoughts last night, and I kind of wanted to go over those with you.
Yeah.
You should check it out on the blog.
Yeah.
But his number one was Juwan Evans has been all over the place, and he has. He was awesome in the first half. Foul trouble caught up to him in the second, but you and I have talked a lot about Juwan and his potential, and you know Doug Gottlieb compares him to Chris Paul. Well, at a certain point, he's got to go win the games. I mean, you just look at Oklahoma, how bad they were without Jordan Woodard, and they get him back. They give Kansas all they want on their home floor, and they go to West Virginia and win. That is crazy impressive. And Jordan Woodard was the reason they went and won there. I think look no further for me than Juwan Evans for why they're not winning games. Now, is that too much to put on him? I don't think so, but I think that it starts with him as far as winning games. He needs to take over and go win them.
Yeah, and he needs to take over in the right way. And what I mean by that is he does this hero ball thing that Marcus Smart did, and it's not as it doesn't infuriate me the way it did with Smart, but it's still hero ball, and he's still taking three or four shots a game that he shouldn't be taking, that he should be kicking out to a wide open Jeffrey Carroll or Phil Forte or whoever, and he's just not he's trying to take over, but he's not shouldering the offense in the way that I think Brad Underwood probably wants him to. And I don't know if that's because he's pressing, I don't know if it's an injury, I don't know if it's a sophomore, so I don't know what it is, but he's got to be better at the end of games offensively, although I think you can make the argument that he's got to be a lot better defensively as well. I think that is the real issue with him and with the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think that's really where they're crumbling late in games. And much of it comes back to the interior, which we'll get to on the five thoughts. He doesn't have much backing him up. But
yeah.
Second thought was OSU didn't get enough pressure on defense. You know, Underwood's known for that style of play, they forced just 12 turnovers when they, you know, they're used to forcing, you know, top five in the country amount of turnovers. And they're just not, they're not getting the turnovers, and they're not turning those into points like they were earlier in the season.
Yeah, they're not. And if you look at their all of their Big 12 conference games, they've really been around that 15% mark in terms of turnover percentage for getting, like, they turn teams over about 15% of the time. They need that to be north of 20, and it's just not been. And somebody brought this up on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. It might have been I don't remember. I wish I could give credit, but
is this in the bullets?
No, I don't think so. This person was just talking about how they're kind of over pursuing on defense. Like they're it's almost like they're trying to do too much, and they're not. You're just not staying in front of your guy and being. They're not as being as pesty as they were. I don't even know if that's a word, but earlier in the year and not
pesky.
Thank you. That's the right pesky, word. Yes. Yeah. I write for a living. They're just not disrupting teams as much. And that leads to a lack of turnovers, which leads to a lack of fast break, easy points, which leads to losses. And when you build your team on turnovers and defense and they don't do it, then that's an issue. That's a big problem.
Yeah, totally. This stat is in the bullets via Chad Rice on Twitter. He says, in the previous 68 home Big 12 games, 2009 through 2016, OSU gave up 90 plus in a loss twice, one of which was in overtime. This year, they've already done it three times.
That's remarkable.
That's crazy.
I don't have an issue with their style. I love their style. You got to get some stops. You got to get 5 or 10 more stops a game, and whether that's steals or getting more defensive rebounds or whatever, you got to figure that out.
Well, which leads us, this is why, thought number three from Kyle Boone, the interior defense was just atrocious. And it goes back to what I was saying on the last podcast was, I guess Travis Ford was just prepared to go to war with Mitch Solomon inside. That's all he had in there. And Underwood piecemealed it together with Gasan, who's still obviously learning how to play. And unfortunately, we didn't mention Tyreek Coger, who Underwood brought in as well. His tragic passing is, we overlooked that last week. I meant to bring that up.
Yeah.
But just the interior defense, just there's nothing there, and there's no resistance. Once they get past the front court, or the back court rather, there's not much there in the front court to stop them.
Well, and this is where you see the kind of effect of the Big 12 come into play, because there's basketball players in the Big 12 that you didn't see in the non-conference schedule. You know, you saw them when you played North Carolina, and you got hammered by North Carolina. So maybe we should have seen this coming more in terms of the fact that every Big 12 team has some big guys. They've got guys that can handle themselves inside. And I'm sorry, Mitchell Solomon's like a good backup center, like a decent, he's just a decent backup Big 12 center. Like he's not your dude on defense or on offense in the Big 12. And they're asking him to be, and it just doesn't work. And so when you face the bigs that West Virginia has, or even the guys that K-State and teams like Texas have, they're just giving up uncontested layups to these big guys inside. It's tough to watch.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, Underwood's hands are tied. I mean, who else is he going to? There's nobody there, which goes back to my point about Ford just leaving the cupboard just completely bare. And that's something that, you know, Underwood's going to have to recruit to. I mean, he's got to go on the recruiting trail and get some big dudes. And that was by far and away, that was Travis Ford's biggest failure, was not bringing in any talented big men during virtually his entire tenure. His best big man, I think, was Marshall Moses, who was a Sean Sutton recruit. So
what do you think about the idea that what level of talent do you think Oklahoma State has in the Big 12? And like, do they have the most talent? Do they have like where are they in terms of Big 12 talent? And what do you think about the idea of Underwood having to get his guys in the program before he starts really winning?
Talent wise, I would put them mid to lower tier, maybe bottom tier, bottom third.
Maybe seventh,
seventh, like
something like that.
Not quite the bottom, but not quite the middle either. Right there, seventh, eighth, right around there. I mean, they have a superstar in Juwan Evans. He hasn't really played like a superstar, but he is a star. And there's not a whole lot else that really grabs you. I know Jeffrey Carroll's had a great season. Don't get me wrong. He's been excellent, but everything else has been pretty hit or miss. Even Phil Forte has been up and down. And then you have a bunch of freshmen who are freshmen. I mean, Lindy Waters, we like all these guys. They're not quite ready for the rigors of Big 12 play. So I would put them 7-8, right around there. Where would you put them?
I would have said 7th, I think. I think that – so here's my issue is that you can talk about, well, Underwood just needs to get his guys in there or whatever. Well, what about OU? They don't have any guys. They've got 2 Big 12 wins. What about
TCU? They have a bunch of young guys too, yeah.
What about TCU? I mean, do they have guys? The last time I checked, they didn't. You know, this is Jamie Dixon's first year. They're 3-3. So we can talk about this all we want. The bottom line is there's only so many Big 12 wins to go around, and Oklahoma State's not getting any of them. And I just think it's I get it. Like, I get the 3- and 5-year plan. I'm all for that. But I think it's a little bit I think it's a little bit disingenuous to just say that there's, you know, the cupboard is completely bare and that, you know, they should not be expected to win at all.
Right. No, I agree with that. And I don't mean to, like, just make excuses for Brad Underwood. It's a wins-loss business. Like, we would be saying, you know, we would be hammering Travis Ford right now if he was 0-6 in Big 12 play. Yeah. So I don't want to be seen as an excuse maker. I just feel like he's having to kind of piecemeal it together. Yes, he inherited a great point guard, but he didn't inherit a whole lot else as far as going to win Big 12 games. He inherited a lot of young kids. That's what he inherited. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of the doubt, but you got to start winning games. You have to beat Kansas State on your home floor. You have to. So yes, it's been a huge disappointment so far this basketball season.
Yeah, I mean,
and I guess that leads me to the fifth point was just the fact they're in the cell. We have a positive note here, Kyle. A positive thought on OSU basketball. Devon Dillard may be the new sixth man. Get a nice dunk last night.
Devon Dillard is he just reeks of talent and ability. Like you just look at him and he looks like a great basketball player. Just the way he carries himself. He makes some really bad passes and takes some really bad shots sometimes. But, I mean, you could tell in that Kansas game, you go to Kansas and get 8 boards and 6 points and, like, 4 steals. I mean, he can play with a lot of the guys in the Big 12. I agree with that. I think he can be a piece moving forward. I think we've kind of thought all year that maybe he'd transfer or end up somewhere else. But I'm excited about his future. I mean, I think if he's your 7th best guy, your 8th best guy, you got a really good team. So I'm hopeful that he can be that over the next 2 years in Stillwater.
He's got some swagger to him too. He'll talk some smack. I mean, Kyle Boone called him a wild card. I think that's the perfect way to describe him. You don't know what you're going to get, but if you feel like gambling and hitting blackjack, I think you got to throw Dillard out there. And I think he's a key piece moving forward just because he does seem like he fits athletically with the Big 12 and the athletes that you go up against. You got to kind of have a guy like that.
Yeah. Well, and somebody emailed me and said that Oklahoma State really only has, I think they said 2 or 3 guys that fit athletically. I think they said Dillard, McGriff, and I can't remember the other one. Maybe Carroll. But everybody else is kind of undersized. I mean, Lindy Waters, Forte, obviously, even Juwan and Everett, in terms of size, they're a little bit undersized. Even with Everett, I don't think it really matters just because of the speed they play with. But it really is an undersized team athletically in the Big 12.
What happened to my boy Crime Dog? Does he play?
Yeah, he's been hurt.
Has he?
Yeah, he's been just kind of had injuries on and off, but he's been playing. He played against Kansas State. I think he played a little against Kansas.
He played 4 minutes against Kansas. He better be hurt.
That's a little bit.
I mean, he looks like an Adonis as a true freshman. Like the dude looks like a NFL caliber linebacker playing basketball.
Yeah. Yeah,
get him on the floor, Brad.
He doesn't.
Where is he?
I don't think he totally knows what to do with his body yet. He's a little bit like a like a deer on skates.
I mean, we were swooning over him in Hawaii, and now he doesn't play.
It's he tried to dunk on the entire state of Hawaii when he was out there.
Yeah. And so, thought number 5: Oklahoma State, bottom of the Big 12. We've kind of gone over that, but yeah, I mean, the fact that Oklahoma, who at times look like they didn't belong in the Big 12, has two more wins than Oklahoma State.
Where do you think both of those teams end up at the end of the year? If you're so there's 12 more Big 12 games, where do both of those teams end up?
I got to think Oklahoma State will end up ahead of Oklahoma. I think so anyway, but they already got a 2-game lead. Am I too optimistic in saying I think Oklahoma State's going to like start winning some games down the stretch? I think they will.
I hope that's not too optimistic. I think that there's a real chance, and this is the homer in me probably. I think there's a real chance Oklahoma State could win like 6 of 8 or like 7 of 10 or something.
I do too. Like they're not far off. They just got to close games. That's it.
And I think the more you lose, I mean, they've lost 13 Big 12 games in a row dating back to last year, and I think once you win one, I think it just kind of opens the floodgates a little bit mentally. I think there's a little bit of a block mentally, but I think Brad Underwood, long term, amazing hire. I think he's going to do awesome at Oklahoma State, and I think there's a chance that they could be awesome the rest of the year, but for what they've done so far in the Big 12, it's been disappointing.
No doubt about it. Do we want to toast somebody?
We do need to toast somebody. It's time for the Coop Ale Works Toast of the Week. Coop Ale Works bring great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works. And please remember to drink responsibly. Do you have a toast, Carson?
I do.
Let's hear it.
And it's not basketball related. Is that okay?
Okay, yeah.
I would like to toast a Coop Elevator, Vader, as we like to call them, to Jordan Stearns, who was on our podcast on Sunday. I thought he was one of the best guests we've ever had. And I knew he would be just because he's just such a forthright kind of dude. And he shared some great stories. He was excellent. So if anyone hasn't listened to that podcast, go back and listen to it. Jordan Stearns was excellent. I think he's always kind of been a fan favorite. And I think he kind of solidified that just if fans get a chance to listen to him talk for like he did on our podcast. So I want to toast to him.
That's a good one. I like that. I'm actually going to toast a non-player or coach. I don't know if we've done this before, but I'm going to toast, and this is a little bit of a segue, but I'm going to toast Chris Knox, who does graphics for us on the blog, pistolsfiringblog.com. He made some uniform graphics that are spectacular. And he's done our uniform stuff all year. He is extremely talented, and I feel like I ask him to do a lot of things, and he does them really well. And I don't know. I've just appreciated his contributions to the blog all season long.
He is a graphics savant. Like, why is Nike not hired this kid already? Like, the stuff he is able to do, I dabble in the Photoshop realm, you know that. I like to make funny ones. And, like, it's not even chess to checkers. It's, like, chess to, like, baby doodles. Like, it's not even, like, close. Like, he's a higher form of intelligence when it comes to the graphic stuff. So, yeah, that's a good toast.
Yeah, I'll toast a DNR to him. I say DNR because our buddy Matt Amelian was at my house last night, and we were drinking some Coop during the game, and he saw the DNR in the fridge, and he said, "Oh, I can't touch that. That's you know, that's dangerous." he had to drive back to his hotel, so it was
He would have had to Uber home if he had a few DNRs.
It was a smart decision by him.
So you guys got together for the game?
Yeah, he was in town, and he came over, got to see the new baby, and it was fun. He was vining me, vining the game. So that was very meta.
Vine Inception.
Yeah, except it's not Vine. I don't know what it is now. It changed.
Is it just on the Twitter app now?
I don't know what it is. It's called like Vine Video or something. I think it's the same deal. Vine Camera.
Oh.
So whatever. But I'll figure it out. Yeah, we had a lot of fun together. He was waxing poetic about Blake Jarwin, and
he loves Blake Jarwin so much.
No, we didn't talk about Blake Jarwin, but we talked about basketball and life, and it was fun to get together.
That's awesome.
Do you want to talk about that uniform review thing?
Yeah, we made our top three uniform picks for college football.
Yeah, well, let me read the promo first.
Yeah, of course, brought to you by our friends at Chris's University Spirit, right?
Yeah, let's get to this week's uniform review brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. So me, you, and Southwell put together our top three uniform combinations for the season, and you want to just start with your number three and talk about it, and we go back and forth?
Yeah, for sure. Let me pull it up here.
You had
that graphic from Knox is just absurd.
You had at TCU number three.
Yeah, I really wrestled with number three. I thought my top two were pretty solid. If I had to go back and do it, though, I might go back to homecoming, the ones you and Southwell had in your top three, which we'll get to with the old brand and the orange jersey and the white pants. But I went with at TCU because I thought it was the best road look of the year. He had the white helmet with the Marshall badge, the white jersey, and the black pants. And I mentioned in it just the new white jerseys with the black numbers went so well with the black pants that it's almost a package deal. You almost, if you're going white jersey on the road, you almost have to wear the black pants because they go together so well. And I just, the brand at first, when I first saw it, I was like, whoa, what are they doing? But the Marshall badge has really grown on me. I like it so much better than any version of Pete. It's not even close. And I don't mind it at all. Like, if they want to wear it most of the time, I really have grown to like the Marshall badge. It's kind of surprising to me how much I like it. So
sad. With
that helmet and the face mask. Well, give me the brand, of course, like my dad likes to say, but we'll get to that. But I thought it was a great road look and one of the best, probably the best road look of the season.
Yeah, I do like it. I like the white, white, black. I also struggled with the number three. Number one was pretty easy for me. So was number two. But number three, I went back and forth. I had the TCU up there, but I went with the Central Michigan game, actually. The black, black, gray. I don't love the they wore the Mean Pete or Angry Pete. I don't know what they're called, but the
Phantom Pete
black helmets. I do like the silver face mask thing, but I don't know. The black, black, gray is solid. Like, I really like it. I love the gray pants. I thought it was a really good look on what turned out to be a really bad day for Oklahoma State football.
That would have been in my top three if not for Phantom Pete. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. That's because that combo does look great. Black, black, gray looked awesome.
Yeah. That's fair.
But and as I mentioned in my post, like the helmet choices were just slightly off on a few combos that I loved.
Yeah.
Like that one, I loved that combo. I just couldn't quite put it in there just because of the helmet. But did you feel this way too, Kyle? I trying to pick my top three, like you and I were so high on all the uniform combinations this year, but I felt like I liked a lot of them. I didn't necessarily love a lot of them just because there was like one missing piece on a lot of them. Did you feel that same way?
It was weird to go back because in my head, I thought they had just a lights out year. And then I ended up putting the first combination of the year in my top three, which I wouldn't have thought that would have been the case. Like when just off the top of my head, the Affliction helmet needs to go. I mean, that that ruined a lot of stuff for me. I'm with you. Like it was a weird year in that like all the pieces worked individually, but sometimes they didn't all work together.
Speaking of the Ed Hardy barbed wire Affliction helmet, my number two was the Alamo Bowl combination, which I was there. I wasn't blown away with it at the time, but just going back and looking over all the uniforms, I thought I have an affinity for the black, white, orange. Years ago, you and I both ranked it as like the best, or I had it number one. You had it number two as your favorite color combination that OSU wore back, you know, several years ago. And I just think black, white, orange is like the most OSU looking combination they can possibly wear. And I thought it looked great. I think the orange pants, we're longtime fans of those. I think those are the best things they wear. But just the new numbers with the orange pants, and I even put up with the sorry, my dog's going crazy here. I even put up with the it's been a while since my German Shepherd made an appearance on the podcast. But all in all, I could overlook the busyness of the helmet just for the overall combo itself.
Yeah, that's that's fair. I do like that combo as well. I like, yeah.
And the orange face mask. I thought looked way better with that combination than it did when they wore all black against Tech.
Yeah, I completely agree. My number two was the Southeastern Louisiana game, the opener. It just, I don't know. It popped to me. I think the new orange jerseys are awesome. I think they just stand out. And that helmet, give me that helmet every game. If you would have put that helmet on, if you would have just worn that helmet every week, it was the chrome brand with the stripe down the middle, then I think it would have elevated a number of other combinations that would have knocked this one out of the top three.
Yeah, I agree. You and Southwell really liked that chrome brand helmet. I liked it.
It's amazing.
You guys love it.
Yeah, we do.
It was good.
Good, not great.
Give me the brand. Like, I think this is a larger discussion here, Kyle. Is the brand a thing of the past? I mean, they wore it one game, the season opener, and then the rest of the time it was Pete or Marshall badge, I think.
Yeah, Trump's America. I don't know. It's just the way going forward. Who knows?
I mean, kids these days don't even know what the brand looks like, probably. Where are we at in society?
This is
today?
A society that we live in.
These millennials don't know what the brand means. I mean, Mike Holder said, ride for the brand, and I'm trying to, but it ain't on the helmet.
I love it when Gundy goes full millennials. Did you see him at the wrestling duel on Sunday?
Yes, I did. With his long sleeve dry fit tucked into his jeans.
Like, if you were writing a TV show, he's like Coach Taylor out of Friday Night Lights, but like the college version.
Well, there was a moment that happened during the duel where OSU got a takedown and he was like the first one to jump up.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait a second, was that Gundy? Yes, it is. Awesome. That is perfect. Like, and he's such like a country guy now. Like, yeah. He's gone full country that like him at like a wrestling duel is just like perfection. And I guess he did wrestle in high school. So it's just,
yeah.
It's
and just he apparently there was a report that he went by gopokes.com that he went to visit one of Oklahoma State's recruits that's about to sign in February. And he watched him wrestle this week or last week. I don't know when it was, but he just went out and, you know, say hey to the fam. Just wanted to watch a duel out here. High school wrestling in Oklahoma. You know,
I mean, I could see him like calling time out and like calling him over. Hey, now. That single leg's open now. That single leg's open. You need to kind of use your left hand. Go Midwest City Bomber High. They taught us this takedown where you fake with the right and you go with the left. And it works every time. Go try it. Okay. See you later.
I feel like that was pretty good. I feel like if Gundy ever speeds up his cadence of talking, that he's going to be full Pat Jones. Like, he's just going to be Pat Jones.
What not? Them takedowns and whatnot, by golly.
What'd you have at number one?
Oh, all black everything. I'm a sucker for all black. I love it.
Yeah.
I make no bones about it. There's not a better look for uniforms than all black. And as I mentioned in the post, like we've talked about this too on the podcast, I can't stand it when teams wear black and it's not a school color. It's such a high school move. It's not even funny. And Oklahoma State has every right to do it because it's a primary, you know, it's orange and black. They could wear black unabashedly and they should at all turns. And I thought the all black looked great. I loved the badge helmet with the chrome face mask. I thought this was a clear number one for me.
I did not have it in my top three, so it wasn't a clear number one for me. I had the homecoming uniforms with the throwback black OSU helmet, orange top, white pants. I mean, it was perfect. Like, it might be my favorite combination they've ever worn. You could wear that helmet. Their homecoming helmets have been outrageously good. They wore the Bronco Rider thing 1 year. They've been awesome. And, yeah, that was what I had at number one for the year.
And the detail too, with like the stickers and everything, the throwback to the Jimmy Johnson era and the sticker for each of the homecoming victims, just the intricate details were nailed to perfection. I wish they could go full throwback with the entire uniform.
Yeah. I think you were the first one to tweet that helmet out. You were down on the field that day and I saw it and I just melted. I was just weak at the knees. It was so good.
just hashtag journalism right there. Breaking stories.
Well, that's it for our uniform review. Let's hear one more time from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit, and then we'll come back, talk a little Mike Yurcich, and wrap things up. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma, is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, Carson, you want to talk Mike Yurcich, talk about the offense next year. You surprised that he's coming back? You surprised that he didn't end up at Auburn?
No, I don't know what's going on with the whole Auburn thing or why that came up. Do you think Auburn was legitimately going after Mike Yurcich, or was this kind of a Gundy maneuver in order to maybe perhaps get some money, leverage, what have you?
Oh, I hope so. I hope he's a power player like that. That'd be amazing. I mean, he makes $500,000 a year. Is he underpaid?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty good. And it was just kind of a weird deal because like Auburn's OC left to go to UConn. Like, they don't seem like a real stable place to go right now, whereas Oklahoma State's 2017 offense is just loaded to the gills. But, you know, Mike Gundy's contract sits unsigned, and I wonder if that had anything to do with it. Not necessarily like that Yurcich thinks that Gundy's leaving or wants to go somewhere else for more stability, but maybe just another way to get back at the higher ups at OSU. Like, let's pay us all more money. Maybe Gundy was holding out for more money for his assistants. I don't know. It's just the whole thing was weird to me. I didn't think for one second he was going to Auburn, but it was interesting that it came about. It's just one other story really with the coaching staff that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. He doesn't strike me, and this is total conjecture, but he doesn't strike me as a, I don't know, as an SEC type guy, you know, like he's from Ohio. He went to school in Pennsylvania. Like, this seems like Oklahoma seems like the deep South for him in terms of like, yeah. I mean, seriously, like in terms of personality, totally. And he doesn't seem like a, I don't know. He doesn't seem like obsessed with football. Like, and maybe he is, I don't know him at all, but like some of the, you know, I think that Gundy's been good about like, hey, we've got lives outside of football as coaches. And I think Yurcich kind of fits that bill. If you go to Auburn, and, you know, put up some zeros on the scoreboard in terms of your offense, you're going to get roasted. Like you got to have some thick skin to go down there. And it didn't seem like the right fit for him.
Well, but if Auburn says, hey, here's $1 million, got to listen, no matter what part of the country it's in.
For sure, for sure.
So maybe listen. I mean, the story lasted like a day, didn't it? Didn't the report come out that he was talking to Auburn, and then the next day he says he pulled his name out? That happened rather fast.
Yeah, pulled his name out, a.k.a. it was never going to happen.
Right. But as far as Yurcich goes, man, I said it a while back, you know, you got to give him credit for recruiting Mason Rudolph. The guy can recruit, and now he has this kid I am just infatuated with.
Jelani the Great.
Jelani Woods, distant cousin of Rashawn and DeJuan.
The long-lost Woods brother.
The second coming of the Woods brothers. This kid looks the part. He's 6'7", can make all the throws, it seems like. It just seems like another gem that Mike Yurcich recruited. So for all the flack he's taken over the years, you have to give him credit for recruiting talented quarterbacks, because OSU was not getting, you know, physical specimens like this at quarterback with like Mason and Jelani. Yeah. So yeah. You got to give Mike credit for that.
The post Mason Rudolph QB battle is going to be fascinating.
Years war of Wood T and Woods.
You're gonna have Wood T, you're gonna have Woods. The oil baron will probably be like a ninth year senior by then. It's gonna be super interesting to see how that shakes out after. I think it's gonna be interesting to see who's the backup next year. I presume it's going to be Woodsy, but I don't know.
Well, that's the first big race, and two, whoever they name number two, the third and fourth guy, you know, John Kohler's still on the roster. You know, whoever's not named number two might start evaluating their options and leave. That's the problem you run into when you have two, three, four quarterbacks is once that depth chart's set, guys start thinking about their future. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what happens and how they handle that. If I'm Gundy, I might just put that or between the two just to keep him on the roster.
Yeah.
Because you know he doesn't want any of them leaving, so he might just give him an or. And I guess Woodtie redshirted this year, so maybe they'll just redshirt Jelani and make Woodtie the backup and just say, hey, you know, we wanted you to redshirt, and that's that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fascinating. Those guys will, whoever the quarterback is, will have a ton of guys to throw to, kind of like Mason Rudolph will this year. I know you wanted to talk about the
this is obscene.
The wide receiver. It is obscene. You know, and what's interesting, Kyle Boone posted about this yesterday, but they don't have a lot of depth at Cowboy back. So I'm interested to see if they go with more like fewer of kind of those like power sets with like the three Cowboy backs out there and run it up the middle, you know, whatever the Les Miles offense. And more like spread it out and throw your best players out there. Just get all your best players on the field at the same time and see what happens. You know, I think it'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, I think you got to go full 2011, like four, five wides. You know, they didn't play any Cowboy back. They didn't have a tight end when Whedon and Blackman were there. They just didn't play one. And I think you have to adapt to the roster that you have. And if you have, let's go down the depth chart here. This is just obscene. Wide receiver one, James Washington, Jalen McCleskey, Marcel Aitman. Those are your starters.
Disgusting.
And here are your backups. Tyron Johnson, who I said, you know, reports are that he's a mix of Jerry Rice and Odell Beckham with like Dez Bryant mixed in.
I went back and I was editing that podcast and I just died laughing, whatever you said.
That's the reports we're hearing, aren't we? Aren't we hearing that he is like Randy Moss meets Antonio Brown? Like the reports are just insane. And Tyron Johnson is wide receiver two on this list. Chris Lacy is 1, 2, 3, 4. He's the Chris Lacy is your fifth receiver.
Sick.
And he's gonna play in the NFL, I'm pretty sure. Now here's interesting. They have the Wallace twins at wide receiver two and wide receiver three above Dylan Stoner on the depth chart. This is the depth chart on PFB. You guys can go read it on the blog, the position groupings. Why would Dylan Stoner be behind these two freshmen?
Well, I don't think it's two of them. I think it's just one, right?
Or does he... Well, I guess he's also wide receiver three with one of them, but the other one's listed above him.
Yeah,
Tyrell Alexander's above him. Or who's Tyrell Alexander's above him? Not the both Wallaces, just one.
Yeah, Alexander is I think he's a guy that redshirted this year. That there was talks that he was going to play, and then, I mean, the better Wallace kid, I can't remember which one is the better one, but
Tylen.
Yeah, I mean, he's a top 75 recruit, like. He's a great player. I don't know, you know, this was us kind of projecting like what it's going to look like. Who knows? Like that's a long way away, but that kid's a big deal. And I think you're going to see him even despite all the depth, I think he could get playing time right away. I don't know. It will be interesting though, because I mean, all of a sudden is Dylan Stoner like your eighth best, like is Dylan Stoner just not going to play? Like I don't know.
No, he'll play. I think Wallace and Alexander might have to wait behind him. I mean, the staff loves Stoner. They were running fourth and one. They're snapping it to Dylan Stoner against Central Michigan. That's how much confidence they have in this kid.
That's still the craziest thing that happened all year. Like, of all the crazy things, other than Gundy not going for it on fourth on at midfield.
The vindication of Kyle Boone. Remember Nate just lighting Kyle Boone on fire for saying they were going to run the Wildcat with Stoner?
Yeah. Yeah,
and the biggest play of the season to date, they did it. And the vindication of Kyle Boone.
Yeah, that was great. Kyle Boone had like hashtag sources just feeding him info, and Nate is just lighting him up for it. But yeah, it's crazy. This, like we've talked about it before. That's why there needs to be trades in college football, because you can only play four wide receivers at one time. Five, you know, whatever, five of them. Yeah,
reminds me of NCAA on Xbox when I was in college, and you could just focus all of your recruiting efforts,
yeah,
on one position. It's like OSU just put all their eggs in the receiver basket and have like 10 wide receivers, 10 like four or five stars on the video game. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, it kind of shines a light on some of the depth that they don't have at other positions, like running back and cowboy back. And I don't know. They're going to have to sort it all out, but it's going to be an exciting offseason, and hopefully it's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, my hope is they adapt their offense to what they have and what they don't have. And I think they will. They're smart. They know what they're doing on offense, so that's exciting. I'm sure Casey Dunn is just lighting up a stogie right now somewhere looking at that depth chart.
Are you going to play in the media golf tournament with Casey Dunn again? Isn't he like a 2 handicap or something?
He's absurd. He hits it a mile, and he wins the thing every year because he stacks his team with like these.
I love it.
These two car dealer guys who are also awesome and hit it a mile, but he did not win this year. Actually, he got upset. So
he's
going to be hungry. He's probably hitting balls right now. Actually,
like he got upset, like he was angry, or he was
no. He didn't win, which was a huge upset. He wins it every year. So like we looked at the, you know, he shot like his team shot in the mid 50s, and someone shot like a 52 or 53.
He probably had the trophy halfway back to his office before he found out that they didn't win.
Yeah, they might have just given it to him because he does care. Because like the year I was on it with him and we won, he was like lining me up. He was lining my putts
that's
up.
Amazing.
Like he was coaching me throughout the round. I felt like we were playing for the green jacket.
Yeah, that's some tour sauce right there. That's,
I mean, I made a few putts too, so he obviously knows how to coach.
That's awesome. I love it. Okay, Carson, what are you doing this weekend?
Just working for the weekend. I'm ready for Team Brady to claim his throne again on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Give me an Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady Super Bowl.
How good is Aaron Rodgers?
Speaking of, we got a tweet we have to mention.
Okay.
You put it in the bullets, and it's just Aaron Rodgers holding up his hands when he was asked about how he held onto the football from getting hit from behind. And you know Mike Gundy was watching that game when Aaron Rodgers got hit from behind, and you know he jotted down on his Big Chief notebook, don't let Mason drop back with 10 seconds left ever again. I did it in Bedlam, but I will not let him do that against everyone else. He just assumed that Aaron was going to fumble and they were going to score the other way. So we will never ever see a Hail Mary again in the history of Oklahoma State football as long as Mike Gundy's the coach, basically.
Yeah, you're right. How good was Dan Bailey, by the way? How great was that kick?
With a herniated disc, just
jeez,
right down. Like the most amazing thing about Dan Bailey is not how accurate he is and how great he is. It's the fact that like every kick, no matter the distance, is dead center.
Yeah.
It is like automatic. He's like a robot.
Yeah,
it's
really is.
Possible.
It's like the you know the golf club robots that you see like testing clubs.
Yes.
Like that just hits it in the same spot. It's like that.
Yeah.
Like that's him.
Totally.
Amazing. If that was a human.
Like before he kicked it, I go, watch, this will go dead center.
Yeah.
52 yarder, season on the line, dead center.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It really is.
And the best part of that Aaron Rodgers thing, one last thing, he was asked, you know, how did you hang on a ball? He held up his hands and just paused. And all he said was, size matters. That's all he said. So maybe we talked about the Mason Rudolph t-shirt. I said he was going to say, like, my hands are fine. They're great. Like Donald Trump, maybe he'll just get a t-shirt that says size matters with Mason's hand on it.
Yeah.
That's the t-shirt.
That'd be perfect. We would sell out of those. It'd be amazing. Just,
well, I'm looking forward to the football. I guess we'll talk next week.
Yep. We will. We will, come back with a guest next week and hopefully Oklahoma State will get their first win, against Texas Tech on Saturday. So
get off the schneid.
Hang in there. Yeah. We'll talk to you later, Carson.
Bye, man.